some of my songs I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's June 7th, 2011. Our show tonight's titled Beer and Cheese. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43, and I'm joined tonight by my co-host, Ray Dieter from the DBA Bars. How are you, Ray?
I'm good, Jimmy. I'm really good. Looking forward to getting down to Philadelphia tomorrow.
You know, for our listeners who can't see, I think, Ray, you got a really great haircut.
Oh, thank you very much, Jimmy.
This is the friendly banter that we always talk about, you know?
Stay on your side of the microphone, okay?
It's off the back of your neck now.
All right. And Sam Merritt's here, our beer sommelier on the Beer Sessions Radio. How you doing, Sam?
Excellent, excellent.
Good. Well, Beer Sessions Radio is sponsored by GreatBrewers.com. Check out GreatBrewers.com to increase your beer IQ. Take the Great Beer Test 100 or 20, which I've taken. Have you ever taken the Great Beer Test?
Many times.
And Sam, I think you wrote it, didn't you?
I did write that test.
You wrote it, so.
I've taken it a few times, and I've never gotten a 100%. So
I take that test every day of my life.
You know what's awesome about Sam? Sam is on our show tonight, and this is a pretty cool show because we have some neat things we haven't touched on yet, beer and cheese pairing, and we're also going to talk a little about Philly Beer Week. Is Tom Peters on the air? Tom from Monk's Cafe.
How you doing today?
Hey, Tom.
Hi, Tom, how are you?
I'm doing grand, thank you.
Mr. Peters.
What's up, Ray? How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, man. Looking forward to having some dinner with you tomorrow night with Wendy and Don Feinberg.
Oh, yeah. I love those guys. Can't wait to see you.
Yep, they've been on the show a few times.
So, Tom, what are your the favorite parts of Philly Craft Beer Week this year?
The beer. there's so many things going on. I think there's over 500 events this year. So I've been sort of focused on what I'm doing at Monk's Cafe. We had Tommy Arthur from Lost Abbey in on Sunday. And we have six really cool beers like Duck Duck Goose and the Framboise and Cuvée de Tommy, that type of thing. And then we had Sierra Nevada come in, and they brought a beer that I helped make at Beer Camp last year that we served, a porter with a tad of smoked malt.
Whoa, Tom, what's Beer Camp?
Oh, Beer Camp.
What you tell us about
everyone
that?
Should go to Beer Camp. It's a thing that Sierra Nevada does for people in the industry right now, but we're considering doing it to the public. And you just go and hang out and brew beer at Sierra Nevada Brewery in Chico, California. And it's pretty darn cool, I got to tell you.
Oh, well, that sounds great.
Yeah.
Sam, have you been out there?
We sat over to Russian River and had Vinny sour the beer for us. So it's a soured
That's something quarters. You can't drive around and do on the East Coast is have Vinny sour things for you.
He's got like a tube of Brettanomyces he just pours into it for you.
We sent it over there. We shipped it over, and he put it in some Dumal Pinot Noir barrels and added, his PDO and Lacto and Brett. He did all those things and
modified
the beer.
Does Sierra do that all year long, or is it like one special time when they do it?
They do a beer camp all year long, but I was at one beer camp. I'm sure I'm not allowed back after our rowdy behavior.
And I know exactly why you wouldn't be allowed back, and I know exactly why I wouldn't want to go without you, Tom. So who else is going to be in Philadelphia for Philly Beer Week? Any other luminaries? I think I read someplace that Michelle Obama is going to be down there.
Yeah, the beer summit. I haven't seen Michelle or Barack, but. I'm sure. I know he's a beer drinker, so I hope he's a good beer drinker.
Exactly right.
But I have a dinner this evening with Vinny and Natalie from Russian River Brewery, and we're doing an eight-course beer with eight draft beers. They're Shun beers, Erudition, Defenestration, Redemption, Temptation,
Defenestration. I love that. Tom, I've been to your place a bunch of times, and I've been to numerous beer events, and with Michael Jackson and amazing people over the years. And I got to say, the only thing that matches the quality of the beer and is the quality of the food at your place. It's amazing.
And thank you. It's very kind of you to say. Yeah, we totally enjoy it.
It's you know, a lot of people say like a brew pub is a restaurant that makes beer, but you guys got it right. You have all the best beers from around the world, and you have some of the greatest food in Philadelphia that I've experienced.
Thank you. We take the food seriously. We have, you know, for the 15 years we've been open, we've taken the food seriously. But,
15 years? What?
Yeah. Well, it's over 14, somewhere around there. I don't know. I've been busy drinking beer. I don't keep track of it.
Yeah, you tend to lose track of those things.
Hey, Tom, a lot of times when people talk about Philly Craft Beer Week, they talk about the star brewers who are coming from other places. But tell us about some of your favorite Philly area brewers and breweries.
Well, my go-to beer in the summertime is Sly Fox Pilsner in a can. It's got a real good balance of hops and malt, a little bit of biscuit from the malt, It's just a real palate cleanser. I mean,
I love that
session beer. Yeah, and then, you know, Victory does a Hop Devil. They do some classic beers, and then they also play around. And, of course, Yards was the granddaddy of them all, and Tommy Kehoe still makes just kick-butt beer. It's amazing.
Also, Carol Stout makes a great pilsner, too.
Man, I just ran into her last night. She sauntered in. She and her daughter-in-law, Jody. Yeah, Carol, you know, she's an icon. And her beers are just dead on. Yeah, they're just, yeah, that those are really good. Their Maibock's great. And I love their double IPA. It's one of my favorite double IPAs.
Absolutely. And their American Pale Ale is amazing, too. It's just really, really balanced and great, refreshing beer for the summertime. Is Carol going to be down there tomorrow night for dinner?
She won't be joining us for dinner, but she'll be in Philadelphia. We'll track her down. We'll go on a hunt, Carol Stout hunt.
It's not hard to find her. She's kind of glowing.
It was fun to sell that beer and get the whole style thing confused with the name when it came to New York, you know?
Oh, Stouts?
Like, oh, I have Stouts Pilsner, and you'd be like, that's not a Pilsner.
Stouts Pilsner? Is it a Stout or is it a Pilsner?
Yeah, it's an oxymoron.
That's like Jolly Pumpkin beer. Everybody wanted a pumpkin beer.
Oh, my
beer,
God. That's the worst name for a beer in the world. It really is. It's a hard sell.
So, yeah. Tom, how many places do you own? You seem like you have your hand in a lot of the really great places in Philly.
Yeah, I have partners in four bars in Philly. One's a brew pub, then three other bars. And then we have I'm involved with the Beer Bistro in Toronto, which Brian Moore is just... cuisine out of beer shack beyond anybody, you know.
Is that with Steve
incredible
too?
So what? And let's just keep going, because you know I've only been to Philly once. Tell us a little bit more. What are the names of the places you're involved in Philly? Because some of us are coming down this week. We might want to check them out.
So is this fair warning? We have to get ready for you guys. I have.
We pay.
Cafe. Tom, you ever see that show, that movie Festival Express?
When we go places, we're bar owners. We actually pay and tip. So
yeah.
But tell us what are the names of your places? Cool. Don't be shy. Come on.
Well, Monk's Cafe, right downtown at 16th and Spruce. That's my the one I have a crush on. You know, it's mm-hmm. The first one. We have Notting Head Brew Pub, a couple blocks away. Then up by the art museums, we have the Belgian Cafe. So it's a little spin-off on Monk's. We only have about 200 beers there, so it's not quite as deep a selection
That's
as
it?
Monk's. Yeah, I know. We're kind of slacking there.
Whatever.
We'll have to step up our game.
Less beer,
and then we have
beer.
A little corner tavern at 23rd and South called Grace Tavern, and it's a really cool little neighborhood place.
That's a great place, Tom. I remember you brought me there when I was down there about a year ago, and we had a great time. And actually,
we walked over from the Penn Museum.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, great stuff. Great stuff.
Sam, do you have any favorite places in Philly?
Yeah.
What are your favorite places?
Monks and the two cheesesteak places, basically.
That's Pat and Gino's.
Yeah. And then just go.
You know, they're really good at 4 a.m, but otherwise they're
yeah.
just okay.
You know, I went to the Craft Brewers Conference a few years back there when we had it, and sure enough, I was on one of those Amtrak trains the next day, completely hungover with cheese all over my jeans and just a great memories, you know. But
you know, Tom, you know what's great about just meeting you on the phone? I've heard so much about you. You have like this godlike aura about you, and you're really a regular guy. So it's kind of refreshing to talk to you.
Wait till you meet him in person. Jimmy's gonna kiss you.
You know, Tom, I got to tell you something. Whenever I go to Philadelphia, I've never had a Philly cheesesteak. I just never had one. Is there a good place anywhere near you?
John's makes the best one.
Yeah.
Right off of Delaware Avenue, but he closes at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Oh. And the other guys are open 24/7.
Okay. There you go.
Well, let's go back, Tom. Sorry. I said this before. Somebody's going to join in with me. You've got a godlike aura. People talk about Monk's Cafe, the top 10 places in the world to have a beer from All About Beer magazine. You know, you're a humble, regular guy. You know, what is it about you? Why do people think you have the one of the best beer places in the world?
Well, you know, like Ray, Ray and Dennis started DBA because they love beer. You can tell when you walk into a place, you can tell when somebody is in it because this is what they love to do, and that this is the beer they want to have access to, as opposed to somebody who's doing it because they hear that's the new trend. You can get the vibe as soon as you walk in, and you know, people sense it, and people want to be where, you know, it's genuine. And we're you know, the people that work at Monk's have all been there like more than 10 years, so. You know, we don't get any turnover. Everybody just hangs around. We treat them well. We hire a masseuse twice a week to give them a massage, and they make good money. And
you're setting a really bad standard there, Tom. That's kind of rough.
And so, what did you go through when you opened up Monk's? Tell us a little bit what you had to go through. You know, was that the original location? Did you expand it? You know, what has it been like for 15 years?
Well, it's amazing. I was running a bar about a block away for the people I worked with for 11 years, and I had sort of turned that into from a Tex-Mex eatery to really good beer bar that Michael Jackson would come in and visit. You know, we had about 80 really good beers and a couple of, you know, stinkers.
I remember that place.
That was Copa 2.
Right.
And then I, you know, this building came available, and this space became available. So I just hopped on it right away, and I had my business plan. I had tested all the recipes. I was ready to hit the ground running. So we opened up with maybe 100 beers in bottles. Now we have 300 on the list. I probably have 500 different bottles in the basement. You know, it's a pretty cool cellar.
Yeah.
Lots of good vintage stuff. You know, like I have some Lambics that are 25, 30 years old.
Wow.
Straight goose.
And did it catch on right away in Philly? Was Philly ready for your beer bar restaurant when it opened?
Yeah, we had a line out the door opening day, and it hasn't stopped. But we had laid the groundwork for the last 11 years, one block away. And that's back in those days. You had to hand sell a beer. You showed them beer. You showed them the glassware. Described, you know, where the beer came from. You know, it's in a Orval. You know, it's brewed in the Ardennes at this beautiful monastery. They only make one beer, that type of thing. Or this is, Yard's Philly Pale Ale. It's made in the garage in Manayunk. You know, so yeah, you would hand sell each beer. And it was really difficult at first. And now people are clamoring. You know, you have all these websites, Rate Beer, a Beer Advocate. So, you know, people are somewhat educated when they walk in the door nowadays.
Ray, what are some of the places you're going to visit tomorrow in Philly?
Well, I'm looking forward to having dinner with Tom at Monk's Cafe with Don and Wendy Feinberg. And where else am I going to go? I'm going to probably pop over to Notting Head and have a beer there. Are they doing the karaoke tomorrow night, Tom? Do you know?
Fergie's.
Fergie's, right.
Yeah, Fergie does the totally unnecessary drink. That's the last day
it's always the wrong drink, isn't it?
And that's pretty funny. You get everybody that's been working their butt off, standing there, you know, singing way off key.
We discussed this before, Tom. Like that Sunday night after dinner at Monk's, when at the final night of Philly Beer Week, it's just ridiculous. It's like everybody's like just like knocking it out. It's great fun, and everybody.
Yeah, if you haven't been to Philly, I mean, Philly is has a really long, deep beer culture. You know, the first lager was brewed in Philadelphia. The first lager in the United States was brewed in Philadelphia. And we just have, you know, kick-ass breweries. And plus, like New York, we get access to all the great beers. But I think per capita, we have way many better beer bars here just because of the, you know, you guys are so spread out. We're, you go to every neighborhood in Philly, and there's a really good beer bar. Go to every little tavern, there's good beer.
It's very impressive.
You go to the top restaurants, and they have good beer. You know, you go to Vetri, and they have a real beer program, you know, not like just like a token beer.
Right.
So it's really cool. I think Philly's unique in that respect. That the,
and one of the things that amazes me, Tom, is that the museum gets involved in Beer Week, too. I've mentioned this on the program a few times. The Philadelphia Museum of Art has a reception in their foyer. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's beautiful.
They do something every year, and of course, the University of Pennsylvania, a Museum of Anthropology and Archaeology, does something every year.
Patrick McGovern, yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Amazing. It's just amazing.
Sam, who is that? You said Patrick.
Dr. Patrick McGovern. He's a biomolecular archaeologist that's finding the oldest beer these days. He's doing the ancient ales with Sam from Dogfish and all that. So he runs a really important department there, right?
We just did a lunch with Sam and Patrick today.
Yeah.
So we're doing the ancient ales at we just did ancient ales at Monk's, and then tonight we're doubling down with Russian River Brewing Company. So
it's a rough week for you.
Rather hectic day today.
So where are you going on vacation next week? You getting out of town?
I'm going to send my liver out for dry cleaning, then I'll be back to work.
It's all about Philly, the research.
Philly Beer Week, if you've not experienced it, it's amazing. It's the original Beer Week. And I know the gentleman that was helping to set up the New York Beer Week, I was chatting with him a few years ago at Mondial, did a beer up in Montreal. And, you know, I was giving him, we didn't want to keep this a secret, so I gave him all the details I had. And then I know he found it your Beer Week the next year, so that's very, that was pretty cool.
That's very beery of you. That's very, you know, collaborative, as we say in the beer.
Well, that's why Tom is the god of the of Philly beer scene.
I think he's actually the devil of the Philly
there
beer scene.
There you go. I'll take claim to that title.
And I can name names and cite incidents too.
Thank God there's no video that then.
Tom, any parting comments? Because we're going to take a short break. Anything you want to say to our listeners?
You guys got to come to Philly, man. It's you can walk from bar to bar to bar and just meet really cool people. Very educated consumer, incredible diversity of beer, you would have a great time. And stop by Monk's to say hi. I'm there maybe 60, 70 hours a week, so I'm there most of the time. So if you come in, ask if I'm there. I'd love to share a beer with you.
All right. Thanks so much, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk with our guests about beer and cheese pairing. We'll be back in a moment on Beer Sessions Radio.
When I think of all the worries people seem to find, and how they're in a hurry to complicate their minds by chasing after money and dreams that can't come true. I'm glad that we are different. We've better things to do. May others plan their future. I'm busy loving you. 1, 2, 3, 4. Sha la 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 la. Live for today. Sha la 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 la. Live for today.
And don't worry about tomorrow.
As long as I'm with you, we'll take it nice and easy and use my simple plan. You'll be my loving woman, I'll be your loving man. We'll take the most from living, have pleasure while we can. 2, 3, 4. Sha la 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 la, live for today. Sha la 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 la, live for today.
And don't worry about tomorrow.
Feel you inside of me. I got to feel you deep inside of me.
Baby, please come close to me. I got to have you now, please. Please, please, please.
Give me some love.
Give me some love.
Give me some love.
Give me some love.
Baby, give me some love.
Give me some love.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We've had a really interesting talk with Tom Peters from Monk's Cafe in Philly. And now we're back. We're going to have a little first ever beer and cheese pairing on the radio here at a Heritage Radio Network. We've got Martin Johnson, who I have respected for many years. He's got a program called The Joy of Cheese. He can often be found at DBA and other places. Martin, how are you?
Well, I'm doing well. I'm happy to be here.
So what? Tell us a little bit about yourself, your website. How can people reach you?
Sure. I have two different blogs that function as my website, thejoyofcheese.wordpress.com, where I have information about cheese and hopefully delivered in a humorous fashion. And then I have a schedule of public events that I conduct at thejoyofcheese.blogspot.com. And it's a list of events that I do, such as that one that's taking place tonight at over at DBA Brooklyn with Ray here.
So you do that about once a month?
Exactly.
DBA, it's a beer and cheese pairing with Ray.
I like to think of it as cheese and beer pairing.
Cheese and beer.
Trust me.
I've sat on quite a few of them, and I love the cheese. I'll say that.
Well, I'd say if it was at, you know, if we were having Cheese Sessions Radio, it would be a cheese and beer pairing. But since we're on Beer Sessions Radio, we're calling it a beer and cheese pairing.
I've been working. I also, Ray and I also collaborate on classes at the 92nd Street Y sometimes, and I've been twisting their arm for the last 3 years that you have a cheese person running the class. Can you stop calling it a wine and cheese class or a beer and cheese class? Never works. Never works. They are always, beverage seems to come first.
So, Martin, how did you get into this? I mean, I've seen you at Ann Saxby's cheese shop. You're kind of snooping around. You're the guy that seems to know a lot more about cheese than anyone I know. And you're entrepreneurial about it. You want to have cheese tastings all the time, you know.
Well, the way
what powers you, man? You're amazing.
Thank you. What happened was this. I've always worked in the cheese and charcuterie world as a part-time employment thing, and it was always a place where you could make a little bit of extra money. And then when I came back, I got away from it. I started doing that in 1984. I got away from it for a few years in the late 90s, early part of right after the millennium, and I came back in 2003. And you know, initially when I was in, cheese was just kind of, it was the cool luxury item. It really wasn't anything super duper special. It was just, it was good cheese. When I came back, it was more than good cheese. It was amazing cheese. You know, you could actually, it was cheese. You know, I even before when I was in the business, it was simply cheese had one note, and the cheese that we sold at the places I worked at had better note, had a better one note than the cheese in the supermarket. When I came back in the business in 2003, I suddenly discovered there was cheese with a full narrative. There was a note at the beginning, a note in the middle, a note at the end.
Wow.
And calling the stuff strong and mild, it was kind of like calling people black and white. Well, there are black people. There
so
are white people. But, you know,
Saxby's,
you needed to do Saxby's more than
cheesemonger.
That.
What are some places that you like to get cheese in New
York
City?
Well, I'm completely, totally biased because I work weekends at the Bedford Cheese Shop, and I think it's the best cheese shop in the city. The
And that's in Brooklyn?
And that's in Brooklyn. It's on Bedford, North 4th Street and Bedford Avenue. Just happens to be sort of just around the corner from DBA Brooklyn. But you know what? Unless we had a really, really bad falling out, I would probably still say that Bedford Cheese Shop is the best cheese shop in the
wow.
city, because it has an exceptional selection of handcrafted cheeses, cheeses that are made in small batches and from milk that's from milk from animals that are present on the farm.
Hey,
so
Martin,
there's a full
you know,
control
sorry,
on the part of the farmer. Yes.
But, and a lot of folks like assume that, like, you know, wine and cheese is a tasting thing, but we've been doing these beer and wine, I'm sorry, beer and cheese pairings. Why does beer and cheese pair a little better than wine?
Well, beer and cheese pair better than... I mean, I don't blame people for assuming that wine and cheese are a natural pairing, because France and Italy make the best wine, France and Italy make the best cheese. Yeah, I think they might go together. And but
there's
it's a really
good beer in France too,
and there's good beer in Italy, from what I'm told. But but cheese and beer have a tendency to communicate at the same volume. I mean, I've had wines that, you know, speak very, very subtly on your palate that you have to pay lots of attention.
I'm sorry, you're
gonna and I have wines, and I have
the
you know,
first whisper
and,
ever.
And
is Heritage Radio Network gonna wait?
And,
whispering loud?
And I've had wines that are just, you know, big, bruising, overpowering things. And that's, you know, if the first thing you have to do is pair the intensity, then...
You're so right. And guess what? We're here with Sam Merritt, our Beer Sessions Radio beer sommelier. Let's do a quick run-through of your favorite beer and cheese pairings. Okay. Pick a cheese, and Sam will pick a beer.
So just
come on.
No pressure, boys. No pressure
come
whatsoever.
Come on, handsome.
Pick a cheese?
Pick a cheese, and Sam will pick a pairing.
Well,
describe the cheese.
Yeah, I was going to say, would you like me to describe it?
Yes, please.
I mean, you know, people are always asking me, to, you know, oh, well, what's your favorite cheese? And I tell them, oh, well, it's Sontelbeek or Schwingerkäse. And they're like, what? You know, did you just step in out of a Fassbender movie?
How about this? Okay,
but,
Martin, slow down. Okay, how about with a good Vermont cheddar? I'm going to put the words in your mouth. Sam, what would be a good pairing with a good Vermont cheddar?
Well, there's many different types of cheddar, right, Martin? So
yeah, I was going to say, why don't we use Vermont cheddar as the limiter on the cheese?
Yeah, yeah.
And then so I will say, why not? So our choice will be the Cabot cloth bound cheddar, which is a literally that, cloth-bound cheddar, so it has a much more complex flavor. It starts with a slightly earthy note, it's a little sweet in the middle, and it finishes with a nice, slightly horseradishy bite to it.
Okay, here it is, the Samuel Smith Nut Brown Ale. This beer is built for English cheddar, I think. It's really, it's got some very sweet, luscious notes that will counter that tanginess of a cheddar. And so, yeah, nut brown ale, I think, is the one.
All right. And something like a blue. Pick a blue that you like, and we'll figure out the
Well, beer. Here, while we've been talking, several cheeses have wandered into our midst. some of them courtesy
there's a lot of cheese in another here. Person here.
And,
so we covered.
Some of them courtesy of... the cheese plate that we've been that our hosts have provided us with, and the blue that's on that plate is the Shaker Blue from Old Chatham, New York, and it's going to be lean, slightly sweet, and then earthy and peppery at the finish.
Should we have
so it's
something?
The old Chatham Sheep Herding Company. Is that the same one?
It is. It is that company, and it's and it's their Shaker Blue.
All I've right. seen that in quite a few little gourmet shops. And
it's well distributed, and it's not far west. So
there's a nano brewery in Chatham, New York, called Chatham Brewing Company, and I would pair that with it. And I would probably take their pale ale because they've got one, and it's a nice zesty beer. So,
where did you try the Chatham brewery, the nano brewery?
At our friend Lee Seinfeld's up at the dive bars up way uptown.
The dive bar?
Yeah, yeah.
They have good cheese and beer.
Well, they have beer.
They're being ironic, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lee is ironic. Lee is very an ironic
all right.
guy. But,
and yeah. what, Martin, one more cheese and one more cheese and beer pairing.
Sure. What's my limiter?
I don't know those
how
words.
About, how about like goat cheese or...
Okay.
Like
goat cheese? All right. Sure.
Is that what a limiter is?
Yeah, wait, just the price.
Yeah, in other words, instead of just randomly picking something out of milk. The 3,000 yeah. cheeses I know of, let's narrow it down to a category. So, okay, if I were picking a goat cheese... my favorite goat cheese of the moment is called Tome Dolce, and despite the European-sounding name, it's made in Petaluma, California, and it's rubbed in plum preserves and plum brandy by a really fantastic cheesemaker out there. And it's firm, it's lean, it's slightly sweet. It has a little bit of the herbal notes that you get from a good firm goat's milk cheese.
All right, with that, I would absolutely insist on pairing it with Lagunitas IPA. That's straight from the brewery, really, in Petaluma. It's got big fruity notes. It's got some mango. It's got tropical fruit. But also it's got a big hoppy, bitter bite that will counter that softness of the cheese, and really, they'll both make a different flavor. Lagunitas IPA.
So those of you who are listening, we've been covering, because out of the blue, our cheese plate from Roberta's appeared. Martin and Sam did a great job. They basically talked about our beer and cheese pairing without any cheese in front of them. And Jonathan White, is it Jonathan?
White
from Bobolink just appeared with his own cheeses and beer. So we're going to take a short break. We're going to regroup. We're going to taste some of the cheeses. We'll come back and talk to you more about beer and cheese pairing on Beer Sessions Radio.
Service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Tune into The Food Scene Tuesdays at 3 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network. Hosted by Michael Harlan Turkel, photo editor of Edible Brooklyn and Edible Manhattan magazines, he'll further explore the amalgamation of food and art by talking to artists from a multitude of media. Guests will range from photographers, food stylists, interior architects for restaurants, industrial designers, all the players that make you want to eat with your eyes. Get ready to feast your ears every Tuesday at 3 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
All right. Michael Harlan Turkel, an awesome photographer, photo editor. He's really he's also involved in so many cookbooks. It seems like every other cookbook right now is Michael Harlan Turkel as a photographer. He's got a great show on Tuesdays, Heritage Radio Network, called The Food Scene. Some neat people. My friend Philip Kirshen-Clark, a chef, was on last week. So it's a pretty good show. I can only say the Heritage Radio Network keeps growing. You know, every few months there's some new shows, and I'm really happy to be part of it. What do you think, Ray? Don't you love Heritage Radio Network?
I'm enjoying it more and more every week. I just look forward to it. It's like the highlight of my week, coming out here and doing this show and getting to meet all the
people. We're out here at Roberta's. We're getting a cheese plate. We're going to finish it up with some pizza. And
we love you guys, too.
Specialty. Thanks, Jack.
Hey, there he is.
Yeah. We have our own producer.
The voice of God.
Kumbaya.
Well, we're covering now, because guess what? We're here. What are we doing right now? We're eating some awesome cheese.
This is a special
and bread.
This is a special occasion, Jimmy.
Yeah,
we got like a
really
spread of cheese and beer, like some of the best beers and the best cheeses on the planet, are like right in front of us right now. How do we get so lucky?
Well, who is this guy that's sitting next to you?
Okay, this is a good friend of mine, Jonathan White, who has this little place called Bobolink Farms, out in the wilds of the west coast of New Jersey, and we became friends. I don't know, 12 years ago.
Whatever.
We had a beer. A beer epiphany, I guess. I sold it and he drank it. and he brings his cheese into DBA. Now he's bringing it into the Brooklyn DBA on Friday afternoons, and we get to enjoy his company and his cheese. And
you know, I've been there Friday afternoons. If you want to, you can sample three or four different cheeses with Jonathan and drink beer. It's kind of the informal happening.
Except that you have to listen to Jonathan.
I go on and on and on. Actually, this Friday, I will not be there. Because this Friday, I'm going to be stuck on the farm. What can I say? What? Some guy wants to make a cake and bring it out to the farm, and it's going to be on TV.
Oh,
some guy, and he's like really? The cake boss.
Jonathan, I want to ask you about your cheeses, but I'm not because it's a beer show.
That's okay.
And I want to talk a little bit about the beer, because beer and cheese pairing is, you know, I think it's complex. I mean, Martin, you had so much to say, and Sam. Do you guys want to taste a couple more cheeses and talk about that? And the process that goes into it, and you know.
Well, what are the similarities between beer and cheese? I know that Jonathan and I have talked about this
multiple
times.
Well, they're both fermented. Mm-hmm. One big, huge difference between them is beer starts with something relatively stable, which is barley, and can be made day after day after day with very little seasonal effect other than, you know, an open vat lambic or something, where cheese starts with milk, which is highly seasonal, especially if it's grass-fed milk, then it's like instantaneously seasonal. And so beer goes from something stable and becomes something short-lived. Cheese starts as something extremely short-lived and ephemeral and becomes something long-lived. So in a way, when beer and cheese meet, they're two ballistic objects sailing through their destinies. And when they cross, it's two terroirs, two moments in time and space in the past. And I think that's one of the really interesting mystical things about it. The good news is that I have a very simple rule. Good beer, good cheese, no bad hits. Okay? With wine, it's a little bit more complicated. There's flavors in cheeses that will, if you pair them with a certain white wine, it'll taste like an off note in the white wine. There are very few misses with good beer and good cheese. You know, Budweiser and Velveeta, not so much. But if you're talking about good stuff...
And pretty much every cheese goes really good with Saison DuPont.
Well, you know, because Saison DuPont is the ultimate perfect beer.
And the
maker of Saison DuPont makes bread and cheese. Mm.
And
so
very good bread and very good cheese, too. What are we eating right here? What cheese is this, Jonathan?
I have no idea.
Oh. But doesn't that debunk everything we've been saying? That you're saying is we'll put out some cheese and some beer?
I don't know, because I haven't been listening.
And we can just figure that out.
The root, Garrett taught me the root of beer and cheese is the grass, because, you know, barley is a grass and wheat is a grass. And so, you know, it's just that grass has been passed through this animal that's done other things, and it's not purely
like the stuff on my legs and my shoes. Actually.
Yeah, it scratches Jonathan. You know, so it's not just grass, but you know, in Omnivore's Dilemma and everything, Michael Pollan talks about, you know, these farmers, they're grass farmers, and those cows eat all kinds of other things besides the grass, but it ends up in the product that you're eating at the same time, and yeah, it is a vortex of, you know, it's a crossing of paths.
Especially chives and the onion grass. Mm-hmm. You can totally taste that in the milk. I remember when I was a little kid, I started noticing the seasonal changes in milk when I was, you know, that I was drinking. And my parents thought I was crazy. But it was like, no, the milk tastes different, Mom. And then it wasn't until I met Jonathan and we were talking about this. And I said, you know, how come milk tastes weird in the autumn? It's like, well, because you're starting to eat hay. And it is.
Oh, I'm waving to the
you
cheese.
Can't see Jimmy's waving. It's like, I want cheese.
I like beer and cheese. Bogarted the brie, I think.
Well, talking about beer and cheese pairings, I mean, it's funny when we first opened Jimmy's number 43. One of the first things that we did that really took off was right after Ann Sachs, we opened Saxby Cheesemongers. We started doing beer and cheese pairings, and they weren't so specific, but it was that we'd have a night where there'd be Ann would come in and put out a bunch of cheeses. And someone like Six Point, who was also kind of new, would put out a bunch of beers, and everyone had a good time. So it does make a lot of sense.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Ray,
the
cheese that we just cut and passed around,
yeah,
it's a little wheel of Amram, and I was lucky. I wasn't sure until I tasted it. This was made when the cows were grazing on wild garlic.
Huh. Okay, right.
Okay. And there's a little. They weren't in the thick of it, so it's only a subtle note in there. But there's kind of an almost skunky, almost white truffly kind of thing in there. That's what wild garlic becomes after not quite 60 days.
Does it act sweet?
Wild garlic is incredibly sweet. That's why the cows eat it.
Yeah.
It gives them energy. It actually worms them too, all the sulfides and everything in it. But the skunk, the cows come into the barn smelling like a World Cup team.
And they take their jerseys off and they run around and hug each other.
Yeah, they pat each other on the back.
So, Jonathan, you brought us. You're part of a really cool scene. So, you're in New Jersey. Which part of New Jersey?
We're in Hunterdon County, Milford, New Jersey.
And so is there like a microbrewery scene over there?
There is. And it's actually the first microbrewery in New Jersey in the modern age. It's called the Ship Inn. And friends of mine have accused me of purposely buying a farm near the Ship Inn. And it wasn't that way, but it could have been. Tim at the Ship Inn is doing very traditional British ales, but then he's also doing interesting local things with them. What I brought is his ESB, which he's been making for 25 years. This is what he calls his Killer Bee Ale. We have neighbors, Beatrix and Jean-Claude Tasseau. They're beekeepers. They produce some of the best honey I've ever tasted, and I'm happy to say their bees buzz around my cows. Wow. And Tim is using their honey as a finish in the second fermentation, in the cask fermentation of the ESB, so that he ferments out the sugar, but you get the flowers, and there's actually a sting in there. That's why he called it
extra special.
There's a little zing in the end of it. Yeah, ESB.
So where is Ship's? What town in New Jersey is it?
The Ship Inn is in the village of Milford, New Jersey, which is on the west coast of New Jersey, but because New Jersey has a very narrow little wasp waist there, it's actually an hour and 10 minutes from Manhattan. It's actually, we're the close-in west coast.
I just love that Jersey, you know, people are referring to it the west coast. And Hunterdon Distributors is over there. That's a part of the Elknife people. They're part of greatbrewers.com as well. Uh-huh. Does Hunterdon distribute this, or do they do their own?
The only distribution they have is Jonathan filling a growler and bringing it out. It's
a microbrewery, and you could go there and get a growler.
Yep. Yep.
And that's about it.
But if you stop at Bobbling Dairy first, you get a coupon, and then the growler costs the same as a six-pack of Bud.
Oh, nice.
Which means there's no reason ever to drink Bud, ever.
This tastes like a beer that someone's been brewing for 25 years. And really got it right.
Yeah. And it goes great with cheese.
Sam, what do you like about this? This is really cool. We found a new brewery
ESB
in New Jersey that I've never heard of. Have
new to you.
Ray, have you ever heard of it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've been there. Much time.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
What's it like? I mean,
It's this beautiful brewery restaurant right on the Delaware River on the west coast of New Jersey. They're brewing very, very English-style ales. You can go there. I haven't been there in a while, but last time I was there, they had a lot of like English style fish and chips and black pudding and that kind of stuff. Are they still doing
food,
that kind of stuff?
The food is English traditional, but it's actually very untraditional because it's actually really good, which is a big break with tradition. But they're doing English food, English pub food, really well, and they're using local beef and local lamb. It's not my beef because I don't have enough. They get the beef from my neighbor Harry. And they get the lamb from Harry, too. And I think they're getting their pork from somebody else.
I'm hungry now. I'm really hungry.
Too. I'm starving. But Sam, what do you think of this beer from the Ship's Inn?
Well, I mean, as an ESB, it's dead on. You know, I mean, from the, you know, BJCP perspective, it's dead on for style. So, you know, it's a great example of style. Definitely you get the little residual of honey, but not the sweetness. Mm-hmm. There's honey there. You know, it's going to come on the front, but it's a beautiful beer.
Would you pair it? Martin's here.
Yeah.
Martin is Martin. It deserves like 17 shows because he knows 3,000 cheeses, and I know you do, Martin. But tell us what cheese would you pair with this beer? We'll go to you.
Well, the beers that have a sweet finish are really, really cheese friendly because a lot of cheeses have a slightly salty finish. So that makes for a really, really good kind of blend on the palate. And it lets the other flavors stand out and makes the pairing kind of become greater than the sum of their whole. I was trying to stall for time and think of a really good cheese that would work well with this. And my thinking would be, if we want to stay with really interesting local sort of cheeses, there's a cheese called Frere Fumont. It's made in Souchon, New York. And the cheesemaker, Karen Weinberg, is awesome. She's at the Union Square Green Market on Wednesdays and Saturdays. And it's a smoked cheese that's really good. 99% of the time, 99.9% of the time that you see smoked cheese,
it sucks.
It's awful.
It's a waste of good smoke.
It means they poured liquid smoke
That's a good one.
So into the curds, so that to hide the fact that the cheese has no flavor. Yeah. But you know, and Karen actually pushed her frère fumant on me several times when I visited her table. And I was kind of like, oh, no, I just ate. I'm sorry. And then finally, one time I tasted it, I was like, oh, this has got a lot of subtlety and nuance. There's a lot of gentle herbal tones. And then there's this, like, this hint of smoke at the finish. And I think that would go really nicely against the honey finish.
Great
in this.
Great choice. And Jonathan, we're going to ask, we have a couple things to talk about before we finish up. But
okay.
When and where are you in New York City? Where can people buy your cheese?
I'm at Union Square, or Bobolink is at Union Square every Friday without fail, in all kinds of crazy weather. We're also at Lincoln Center on Thursdays and Saturdays at the Farmers Market at Broadway and 66th Street. That's my wife Nina's market. That's how she gets to ballet class. She, you know, that gets her into the city to steps for ballet class. We're also open at the farm every day but Tuesday. And I think coming to the farm is, there's a better selection of cheese. It's near the Ship Inn. It's a beautiful drive. And the most important thing is you can come out and see the cows. We have tours on Saturdays and Sundays at 11. You usually need to reserve in advance on our website, which is cowsoutside.com. And you can see the oven, our wood-fired hearth oven, where we bake all the breads. You can actually see the oven and monitor the real-time temperatures and live video at oven.cowsoutside.com. But it's really nothing like being there and coming and really seeing what it's all about and seeing the cows and more importantly, seeing the calves drinking milk from the cows, which you won't really see too many other places. We're raising our cows the way they existed before humans got involved, except there's fewer predators.
They have very, very old cows compared to everyone else there. They get cataracts because they're
that's right.
treated so well, yeah. And I think that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, so. Yeah, our cows live long enough to go blind. We have a 19-year-old who just gave birth.
It's definitely the connection between craft and beer and craft and other food products, and we hope to explore that more. Here's a quick question. We've got our panel of experts here today, Ray Dieter and Sam Merritt. An email question from Jenny M. in Manhattan. Thank you, Jenny, for emailing us. Okay, what are some good dark beers for the summer? Ray Dieter.
You know what? I got to say Cigar City Maduro.
Mm.
Oh, my God. What a great beer. Yeah, really a great dark beer. What do you think, Sam?
Kostritzer Schwarz beer. Nice. Ice cold. Those black lagers are amazing. And if you shut your eyes, it tastes almost like one of my favorite beers, Schlenker La Helles.
Jonathan, you sound like you have one in mind. Anything from the Ship's Inn? Any dark beer for summer?
You know, I never really liked dark beer. In fact, I mean, porter has been something. Every time Ray said, "Oh, you got to try this porter," it's like, "That's okay." Tim at the Ship.
Oh, Tim
offered
Tim,
me.
Tim.
Well, yeah. Sorry, Ray. You got to make your own beer to get, you know, to be really cool. No, he said, "Oh, here, try my porter." I was like, "Nah, please, no porter." He goes, "No, try it." And having tasted it right from the cask, it was awesome. And he filled me a growler of it, and I brought it home. And about a week later, I remembered the growler, and I tasted it, and I remembered why I don't like porter. Porter's really good when it's well handled, but it seems to die on the vine. So I've opened my mind. I mean, next time I'm at DBA and you offer me to try a porter, I'll try it. But, you know, I think it's one of those beers.
Maybe I won't open it anymore.
Dark beer for summer. Basically, a lot of good dark beers, a lot of stouts that aren't too strong with a nice roasty, bitter, you know, finish are perfect in summer and very refreshing. I like something like a Belgian stout, Troubadour Obscura. That's one that...
That's a great one.
I found to be good. Or dark lager. Dark lager like a Schwarz beer is really good. So, anything you like in summer, dark beers?
I drink the same dark beers in the summer that I drink in the winter. I have no problem with the idea that, so what, the weather's warm.
So a name of a beer?
How about the Schlenkerle Doppelbock?
All right.
Beautiful. I got to jump in on this one with Guinness. The Guinness Export is like the best beer in the world with the oysters. It's only available in bottles. The Extra Export, what's it called, Sam?
There's Foreign Extra Stout, and then there's Extra Stout.
The one that's like 7.5%.
So the Foreign Extra.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is like the summertime beer to drink with oysters, raw oysters.
Nice and cold.
It's ice cold.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Like drink it like
Bud
cold.
Drink it, yeah. It's like putting, almost putting ice cubes in your Cabernet, which you're not supposed to do.
But this is amazing. Yeah. That's an amazing pairing, I think. Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Wow, ice cubes in your Cabernet. I love
yeah,
that.
Well, but this is a beer show, Jimmy.
So, yeah.
See, whatever.
What do you do?
Cabernet's Cabernet.
JM, good dark beers for summer. There's a few right there. We're going to just give a shout out to our Good Brew Seal bar events. GoodBrewSeal.com. Guess what's coming up? July Good Beer Month is right around the corner. And next Tuesday at Barcade in Brooklyn, celebrate the Good Beer Seal Awards. There will be several new good beer bars in New York City that will receive this award. It's a great party all around for press, industry, and listeners like you. So come by Barcade next Tuesday, June 14th, 7 o'clock to 10. You'll meet a lot of really cool people, including Ray Dieter, Jimmy Carbone, and Dave Broderick. All right. And on that note, thank you so much to everybody. This has been a really cool event. Martin Johnson, Sam Merritt, Jonathan White, and Ray Dieter. I'm Jimmy Carbone, and thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Brie O'Connor. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
I like to drink beer.
Well done.
Right.
This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
This little refrain should help me explain, as a matter of fact, I like beer. My wife often frowns when we're out on the town and I'm wearing a...
This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer. Our near neighbors, our trading partners, Mexico and Canada, filed a suit recently with the World Trade Organization protesting the implementation of COOL, or country of origin labeling. I, for one, have kind of appreciated COOL because it tells me where my seafood comes from, and I don't always want to eat shrimp from Thailand. But in the World Trade Organization panel, they issued a preliminary ruling on the case that Canada and Mexico filed against the U.S., stating that the mandatory COOL requirements do not meet the United States' stated objective that the labeling law informs and helps U.S. consumers make purchasing decisions regarding the origin of their meat, produce, and other products covered by the labeling law. COOL started out as a voluntary labeling program in the Farm Security and Rural Investment Act of 2002, which was the Farm Bill then. It had specified that COOL would include pork, beef, lamb, fish, perishable agricultural products, and peanuts, and that it would become a mandatory requirement by September 30th, 2004. It actually was not implemented until 2009. I'm sure you've noticed, especially on your fish counter. However, opposition was mounted by numerous agricultural groups, including the National Cattlemen's Beef Association and the National Pork Producers Council, as well as from packers, processors, and retailers. COOL opponents argued that the program costs would far outweigh the benefits, which were not well determined, and that the marketplace and consumers should drive the need for such programs. Also, the consensus was that the effort driving COOL smacked of protectionism. Well, I can understand how they'd feel that way, because we buy so much young cattle from Mexico and Canada, and then it ends up being finished and processed here in the United States. And of course, we buy it very cheap from those countries, and then we can market up here. So the packers, processors, et cetera, make much more money than they would on cattle that they buy from the U.S. So anyway, long term, if the WTO ruling stands, the United States will have to dissolve mandatory COOL or risk trade retaliations from Mexico and Canada, both of whom are major U.S. trading partners. So it's something to ponder. This has been Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer.
Did you know we have a show entirely about cheese? Take a listen.
Well, I know this is it's horrible to do visual things on the radio, but if you were all sitting in the studio, you would see this wheel from late May is quite pale in color. It's it's a little bit, like a milkier, sort of a very soft yellow. And then the wheel from late June is quite golden and intense looking. It's a really deep, deep yellow. What causes that difference?
Well, I'm quite sure it's the grass. It's the keratin in the grass. And, that's giving it that yellow color, not fat, but definitely coming from the pasture. Our animals are fed hay through the winter now. We don't use fermented feed because that won't work with our cheese. Mm-hmm. But So they're essentially grass-fed year-round with grain supplement.
If you like what you hear, Cutting the Curd airs every Monday at 4:30 p.m. on Heritage Radio Network. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast or check it out in our archives.